The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Joining us now, and we're live from Washington, D.C., right in the middle of the swamp at Corey Lewandowski Milky Way Galactic Headquarters, our studio here, by the way. But right now, House of Delegates member, Southwest Virginia, Terry Kilgore. Delegate Kilgore, great to have you on again, man.
Hey, great to be on with you this morning. Hope you're doing great.
Never better. Really looking forward to the president's speech tonight. A lot of us were advocating this for a long time. I saw him last evening at a briefing with his top media surrogates, and under all the pressure he's under, the president in a great mood yesterday, laughing and joking and just having a good time. He understands the issues, and I look forward to him really laying the facts out tonight. So, Delegate, here we go again, right, rolling into Richmond. General Assembly about to convene in the next day or so. I just had Kirk Cox on. I love your tax cut. Look, I was with the Democrats yesterday, Saslaw and David Marston, who used to be a Republican, by the way. Chap Peterson is reasonable. And although they don't want to give the Republicans any credit, they couldn't help themselves but agree that the Kirk Cox and Republicans tax cut plan made sense. So,
well, it does.
How do you
sense.
Get this done?
I mean, it's just clearly.
How do you get this done?
Go ahead.
How do you get this done?
Well, I mean, I think we can get it done. I think, we just got to sit down. You know, unlike Washington, we've got to balance a budget. We've got to make sure that, the schools and our deputy sheriffs and everybody are funded. So, you know, we're going to sit down and talk about it with Governor Northam and with the Democrats. But we really do need to fix this issue, because of federal tax law, which President Trump pushed to give a tax break and give tax cuts, but it significantly increased the standard deduction. And, if a lot of Virginians are going to be taking that standard deduction instead of itemizing. But on the flip side, in Virginia, then they're going to be paying higher taxes. So we need to make sure that we fix it to give that windfall back to the taxpayers, back to those individuals who are paying and by allowing them to do the standard deductions. So I think it makes sense. It's common sense approach. There's nothing extreme about it. So I think that's something that we can work on during this session to get it through. There's a lot of reasonable people on both sides of the aisle that I think see the problem and see that this is the solution.
So there's no 60-vote cloture rules in the House of Delegates?
No.
Or, right? So, you've got a majority in the Senate. It's going to pass there. No question about it. I can't think of why a Republican senator would be opposed to giving money back to middle-class, hardworking Virginians. I couldn't imagine. I think it's going to certainly pass the House of Delegates because it makes sense. I mean, first of all, just again to go over the three pieces of it. Number one, it gives people in Virginia the opportunity to itemize at the state level if they so choose to do that. Why would you take that choice away? What would be the argument? No, you can't choose what to do. What would be the argument for that?
I've thought about it and thought about it. I don't know what the argument would be other than, hey, I want government to keep more money and I want the government to expand and we know better how to spend it than you as a family member do. But that's, $800-$900 is a lot of money to a lot of families out here who are living paycheck to paycheck. And I think, it's their money. We ought to make sure that they're able to keep their money and spend it on their kids or spend it on a bill that all of a sudden comes up. So I think it's a smart move and a reasonable move.
Okay, then let's go to the second item, which is you get to raise the standard deduction if you so choose to take the standard. This is the thing. If you choose to take the standard deduction and you don't want to itemize, fine. Then we're going to raise that $8,000 to couples and $4,000 for individuals. Now, it doesn't matter if you make $25,000 or $125,000. You get the benefit of a higher deduction if you so choose not to itemize. Who on earth would be opposed to that?
Just those folks who want to keep the money is all I can say. I mean, I think that it's a very reasonable opportunity for folks. And we're not saying you do this or you do that. But like you said, John, you choose.
You
and
choose.
If you want to itemize, itemize. So, it makes a lot to our citizens to win.
That's why I think this makes all the sense in the world. And I just named two of them, Delegate Terry Kilgore. If you go to the third one, which is they're going to take the cap or the $10,000 cap off SALT, which is the state and local taxes. Right now there's a $10,000 cap. They want to take that off because, look, if you happen to live in – I mean, look, a lot of the Democrats criticized the Trump tax cut because it increased taxes on people with bigger homes and bigger mortgages, high property taxes, Fairfax and Alexandria, things like that, where they have the McMansions. Now, you guys are saying, okay, well, let's take the cap off. Whatever it is, you can deduct that. Again, I mean, the only people that would be opposed to this are those that want to keep more of your money. Or they could say, well, we hate the Trump tax cut. We want to screw the economy. Well, I mean, it's passed. It's law.
I just don't understand that. You know, there's a lot of people, as you know, John, that are paying a lot of state and local taxes. You know, $10,000 is not a whole lot. If you have a reasonably priced house, it's not a whole lot. You know, a lot of times you're going to get a tax bill of $10,000 by the time you pay your real estate tax, your property tax, and other local taxes. You're going to have something over $10,000, and we'll order. And, you know, that's a tax, and we all allow you to deduct that from what you're paying.
All right. Now, I have to go over this with the speaker for a couple of minutes, but there's some rumor going around. Here's a text I got from William in Norfolk, Virginia, who said, John, you said the Republicans wouldn't go after our guns. Well, one of the new laws they're trying to propose and cut a deal with Ralph Northam is an assault weapons ban. There's secret meetings. I saw this all over the internet. The Republicans want to ban assault weapons with guns with magazines over 10 rounds, which bans most semi-automatic handguns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Republicans are selling us out. What is the deal with this?
No, that's not true. Our caucus believes in the Second Amendment. We're not making any secret deals with Governor Northam to take your Second Amendment rights away, to ban assault weapons or anything of that nature. So I don't see any of those bills passing.
Where do these come from? I mean, where do these rumors come from? Like, people just make them up and send them out?
It must do it because people just make things up and get behind a keyboard and start typing. I don't know where those come from, but I can tell you those bills are dead on arrival. I do not see any of those getting to the floor, and then I don't see them pass. Even if they did, I don't see it passing. So I don't think there's anything to of course it's going to be a fight, but I don't see that there's anything to worry about.
We're with House of Delegates member Terry Kilgore, Republican, Southwest Virginia. Delegate Kilgore, let's get to school safety and the Republicans' agenda going into this 2019 Virginia General Assembly. Democrats, they want to talk about guns. We want to talk about school safety and keeping our kids safe. These are real issues that people care about. Is there a Republican plan in 2019 that you might be able to negotiate with Governor Northam that would increase school safety in Virginia?
Well, yeah, obviously, I think we have a plan to move forward. Speaker Cox had a school select meeting all summer on safety, came up with some great ideals. a couple of those ideals surround, you know, mental health, getting more mental health guidance counselors into the schools to, you know, to talk to kids when it's perceived that there are problems. And another thing we've got to do is continue to have more school resource officers, because if you have school resource officers, an officer with a gun and able to protect those children, I think it really could prevent something like this from happening. And, you know, down in Lee County, one of the counties I represent, they're even going as far as the school board's asked to arm some of their teachers who have been trained. So there's a lot of opportunities out there to make sure that we provide safety for our school kids, because, you know, when parents drop their kids off at school, they're in our care. They're in the school system's care, and we need to make sure that we provide a safe environment for those kids.
Where are you going to get the money for additional resource officers?
Well, I mean, we've got money this year with some of the new monies coming in as a result of the Trump tax cut. We've got, more people, the economy's booming. Things are working well here in Virginia, so we've got some money that we could put some more school resources officers out there. And, a lot of localities are already in the process of doing that on their own. So, I think it's going to be a partnership with the state and local governments to make sure that we're able to fund those. And I know that, as far as the school guidance counselors, I think we can find the money for that.
Delegate Terry Kilgore with us, Republican, Southwest Virginia. Let me just ask you this. The governor's budget, Ralph Northam's budget, $2.2 billion in spending. This is predicated on a $1.2 billion budget. So this is one of the biggest spending budgets I've ever seen since I've been here. And basically what Governor Northam wants to do is take the Trump tax cut revenue, which is pouring in. That's why your coffers are so flush right now, way ahead of budget. And he wants to just spend it. But one of the things he wants to spend it on is he wants to give teachers a raise, 5%. Wants to give state troopers a raise, 5%. Both of those are at the lower end of the pay scale in the country. Can you do some of it? I mean, that I think generally people back giving teachers a raise, state troopers a raise. How do you navigate your way through that, plus do your tax cut?
Well, I mean, I think we can give raises. We can do some good things for our employees that work for the state. Teachers are very supportive of teachers. I think they are underpaid, and our state troopers, they do a great job day in and day out. But, you know, when the rubber meets the road in the General Assembly, and the governor can come out and do a lot of press conferences and say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But, you know, we're the ones that ultimately have to decide what we have the money for and what the priorities are. And then we'll go back to the governor and work with him. But I think we can do a lot of those things. Can we do 5%? I'm not sure about that. But we can make a big dent in bringing the teachers to the national level. We can make a big dent into making sure that our state troopers and our sheriff's deputies and others are compensated for the jobs that they do to keep us safe.
All right, final question here. I got another text here from William in Norfolk. He said he heard on Channel 3 this morning that Democrats were attempting to get gun legislation that's going to ban semi-automatics. So this gun thing now seems to be dominating the day here in Virginia.
Yeah.
Can you just address William directly? Is there going to be an assault weapons ban and some nefarious deal on guns?
Yeah, William, there is not going to be an assault weapons ban in Virginia this year. I can tell you that we're going to the Second Amendment. All of us are very strong supporters of the Second Amendment, and that's not going to happen.
All right, that's going to be the final word. House of Delegates member, Republican, conservative, Southwest Virginia, Terry Kilgore. Delegate Kilgore, always great to have you on. Love your refreshing, candid perspective. Thanks for being with us, sir. Joining us now, Victoria Cobb is the president of the Family Foundation in Virginia. Victoria, thanks for being with us. Yesterday, in a shocking move, Jill Vogel, chairman of her committee where the ERA amendment was stay right out of the back the box, forces it out of committee with two Republican votes, 8-6, Vogel's vote, and conservative senator from Virginia Beach, Bill DeStef, both voting for it. It gets out of committee. Now it's going to go from there. Victoria, you've got major concerns with this bill. Why?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. And yes, it is shocking when conservatives do things that are not conservative. And I know that you have spoken on the show a little bit with folks about laying the groundwork for the abortion issue in the U.S. Constitution, because that is what the Equal Rights Amendment does. It's not just symbolic. And I think that's what people don't understand. It sounds good. I think if it were just a nice statement about women's rights, everybody would be on board. It is more than that, and that is why everyone should care. I know it's not your top issue. I heard you say that. I get that. But it should be a matter of everybody's top issue, because it actually does a lot. And I think the most important thing that people need to realize is that when people say they're conservative, typically what they mean is that they believe the government is best when it's closest to the people. They believe in federalism. And what the ERA does that is very important and not talked about is that it turns a whole host of issues over to Congress. And I think we all know Congress is not super popular right now, but if you look at the second clause of the ERA, it says Congress will have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. That is a host of issues that we are giving up state power. So Senator Vogel, Senator Sturtevant, as the patron of the bill, also Senator DeStef, as you mentioned, they have just ceded their authority to Congress.
Okay, so, Victoria, I think there's a political calculation here, right? So DeStef is at no risk, but you look at Sturtevant, he's in a swing district, and Vogel is looking for a way for Republicans to hold the Senate, which is probably about a 25% chance right now before Sazlaw takes over. They're not going to win Dick Black's district and basically mail it in. They control the Senate. So they're part of this, I would think, Victoria, is a political calculation. And I think what they're saying is backing this, there's no real threat here because we got to get all these states and it's going to get litigated. It's going to go to the Supreme Court even if it passes. So I think basically what their position is it's a lot of jumping up and down, but at the end of the day, so what? How do you rebut that? I mean, that's kind of what I've heard.
So the team that they are on, the fact that they have taken these votes, they have joined with the supporters of the ERA, that team argues that they have a legal pathway. We would certainly all agree that it is dead. It has been invalidated. The deadline has come and gone, 1982. But they have, in their mind, a legal pathway. So these legislators are voting for something where their team is saying, yes, this is going to go into law. So it is not purely symbolic in the fact that it does real things, right? It's not just a resolution. If this were a resolution, everybody would be on board. But it's not. And they're banking on their electorate never finding out that it does real things, that it actually transfers power. I don't know a Republican. These all are people who are wearing a Republican label. I don't know a Republican that says, yes, let's give more government power at the highest level. It's just not a Republican principle. I don't know a pro-life legislator that would ever, if their constituents understood this is laying the groundwork for abortion in the U.S. Constitution, would support a piece of legislation. They're banking on the symbolism of it being able to be the only thing that their Republican base and their voters understand about this bill. And I think that's a very dangerous wager.
You're on the John Frederick Radio Network. We are with Victoria Cobb. She is the president of the Virginia chapter of the Family Foundation. And she is opposed to the Equal Rights Amendment bill, which is making its way now through the General Assembly in Richmond, got out of committee yesterday by an 8-6 vote. Jill Vogel, conservative senator, ran for lieutenant governor. She'll be with us at 8:35. She got it out of her committee, and on an 8-6 vote with both her vote and also on the committee, Bill Deese, that got it out. So, Victoria, I had Susan Stimson on yesterday, who was very articulate in defining why this would lead to additional taxpayer-funded abortion rights. Can you reiterate and explain exactly how that would work?
Absolutely. So the Equal Rights Amendment, essentially creates this concept of strict scrutiny when we look at questions of are the sexes treated equally. That raises the bar from what it is now. And what happens in that is that, and we can see it because certain states have added language just like this to their state constitution. And certain states have added that language, and what we've seen in the courts is that that language has paved the way for basically the court to say, we can't differentiate between certain medical procedures for men and abortion for women. So not only do we have to allow it, we actually have to fund it through our government dollars. So it is literally the comparison between men and women that this creates at that highest level that then creates this quote-unquote right to abortion, which for pro-life folks, we view the situation in America as that we have abortion legal because of court decisions that are not squared away clearly from the U.S. Constitution. And so they can be reversed or at least scaled down in terms of what the wide open access and some of those things by the court, now that particularly now that we have a new U.S. Supreme Court. So for the left and the pro-choice folks, this is really important, this Equal Rights Amendment, because this is their pathway around a new Supreme Court.
We're with Victoria Cobb, president of the Virginia chapter of the Family Foundation. That's Ralph Reed's organization. Victoria, your organization released polling results last night. Can you, I got about 2 minutes. Can you speak to those?
Yes, absolutely. I do want to clarify we actually aren't connected to Ralph Reed. But anyway, yes, we did release some polling data. We took a poll, and the moment that Virginians find out that this is more than symbolism, the support drops actually to a greater number who oppose it. We literally asked them, if you understood this does lay a legal groundwork for abortion, would you support it? You know what they said? 47% said no. We would not support it. 42% supported it, and some folks still trying to figure out what's going on with this. That is absolutely the opposite of the narrative that is being written, and these senators are banking on the Virginians in the course of, as this unfolds nationally, that people aren't going to find out this does real things and transfers real power away from our state on questions of not just abortion, but on questions of how all the places where our state tries to make distinctions between men and women. And when we make those distinctions, we're not talking about equality. We're talking about not being identical. So there are times where we say we think it's okay for women to have their own sports team. We think it's okay to have some privacy rights in showers or locker rooms or whatever it might be. That should be the domain of the state and the community, not Congress.
And this polling was done by Mason Dixon, right?
Yes, Mason Dixon did the poll. And you know what? For Republicans, it should be very alarming. That number for Republicans, opposition to the ERA, if they understand what it does, goes to 79%. So I think as you have Senator Vogel on your show later today, you know, ask her, why do we want to transfer this power to the federal government? Why, if we're pro-life, would we ever jeopardize the life issue in the U.S. Constitution?
So where does this go from? I've got a minute, Victoria. Where does this go from here?
I mean, well, if you want to stop it. Senate floor. We certainly are concerned that it will pass the Senate, given that we typically have seen strong Democrat support, and then we know we have some Republicans who have already voted for it. Now, in the House, I don't think it's a done deal at all. It goes to a Senate Privileges and Elections Committee. That's a strong committee of conservatives. So these are folks who, again, like Senator Vogel and Sturtevant and DeSteff, they'd have to be, I believe, duped that this is simply symbolic. And I believe they're starting to understand that there are so many pro-life groups that are enraged about this and starting to wake up to realize that the 38th state they're claiming will be Virginia. And so we're doing a press conference today with groups across the country to talk about the impact of this bill.
Victoria, have any House Republicans come out for this that you're aware of?
The only one
Glenn
I know
Davis.
Was Delegate Roxanne Robinson last year signed on, but I don't know that she's still on board. We are working on that.
Okay, so basically you've got a one-seat majority and two defections, it's over, right?
If so it gets to the floor. Remember, the committee process screens the bill first, and so if they don't get a majority of the committee that focuses on amendments, they can't get to the floor.
So, Victoria, here's the real challenge here. So Republicans are hanging by a thread in the House of Delegates. They're in the majority only because they won a coin toss. I doubt very much vulnerable Republicans are going to want to raise women's issue in a backlash. So if I was gambling on this, I think you're a huge underdog to get this stopped. I hear what you're saying, but unfortunately, you're fighting political winds here that are very, very strong. So we'll see what plays out. But I want to thank you for your time, and I want to thank you for helping us understand your opposition to this. We'll certainly ask that question to you.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper has declared a state of emergency that he says will help utility crews restore electricity more quickly to the western Piedmont, foothills, and mountains of the falling of winter storm. Cooper issued Sunday the statewide declaration, which waives certain truck restrictions on roads so that vehicles can gain easier access to where power lines fell due to freezing rain, ice, and fallen trees. Republican lawmaker advising President Donald Trump says he's encouraging the president to reopen the government for several weeks to continue negotiating with Democrats over funding for a U.S.-Mexico border wall. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina says that should be considered before the more drastic step of declaring a national emergency. Graham tells Fox News Sunday the president still wants a deal on the wall before reopening the government. More details at srnnews.com.
Pat Boone here again, and I assure you, I have never before endorsed a pain relief product. Not until now. Not until Relief Factor came along as a 100% drug-free solution for people struggling with ordinary pain. Quite simply, Relief Factor was designed by doctors to help relieve those occasional aches and pains due to aging, exercise, and everyday living. Let me ask you, are aches and pains keeping you from sleeping through the night? Or keeping you from taking those nice long walks or playing golf or tennis? You can't really call it living if you can't get around comfortably. The 3-week quick start from Relief Factor may be all you need to lower or even eliminate these pains. A whole lot of people have already gone to ReliefFactor.com, and here's something you need to know. The majority of people who order the 3-week quick start, now only $19.95, go on to order more. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to ReliefFactor.com.
Hi, it's Mac with Baker Glass. If you're having trouble finding a clear option for that new shower enclosure or a replacement for that fog glass, then call the Baker Boys or find us at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better. Hi, this is Mac with Baker Glass, where we use our more than 32 years of experience to provide a complete glass service to all of our customers and a clear choice for you. See for yourself at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better.
The year was 1957, and two of the top movies that year were Around the World in 80 Days and Jailhouse Rock. It was also the year that American Bandstand and Perry Mason made their network TV debut. Also in 1957, Boker Shoes opened their shoe store on Park Street here in Jacksonville. For 62 years, Boker Shoes has been serving Northeast Florida for all of their footwear needs. With your prescription, the three board-certified podiatrists on staff at Boker's can custom make your foot orthotics in their on-site lab. And Boker Shoes offers free foot evaluations with a professional staff that have over 75 years of combined shoe fitting experience. Boker Shoes can find the right shoe and the right fit, whatever your needs may be. Boker Shoes also carries many over-the-counter orthotics and foot wellness products. Come by Boker Shoes' newly remodeled store today at 1014 Park Street in Jacksonville. Boker Shoes, the answer for hurting feet, and Happy New Year from everyone at Boker Shoes.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
Hey, Bobby Scott's just up the street. He's joining us right now on the John Fredericks Radio Network. A lot of swamp creatures running around. I love when the General Assembly starts in Richmond. Bobby Scott was there a long time ago. And they go to the lobbyists running around in their $5,000 Armani suits trying to get things done. It is quite the show when the General Assembly rolls in there, Richmond. But we're not there today. We're in D.C. We'll be in Richmond tomorrow at Bill Stanley's office. But right now we're in the swamp. And joining us now is Bobby Scott, a longtime contributor to the John Fredericks Radio Network. And also, Bobby Scott, I consider him a personal friend. He's my congressman. I'm very proud to have him as my congressman. And there's a lot of things that Bobby Scott and I agree on. It's an interesting relationship because we agree on the most important things that have come up in the past 20 years, like getting out of these wars, not getting into them, things of that nature. So a lot of things there. But he's joining us now. Congressman Bobby Scott, 3rd District, Virginia, Democrat. Congressman, now you got elected chairman, and who's your ranking member?
Virginia Fox, the former chairman, will now serve as the ranking member on the Republican side. And we've agreed to continue to work together in a dignified fashion. So you won't be seeing a whole lot of headlines of people yelling and screaming at each other like you see on some of the other committees. We'll try to address our issues in a Virginian way. And we're going to agree and disagree, but we're not going to be disagreeable. And we're going to try to get better education, higher wages, better workplace safety, reduce health care. There are a lot of things within the jurisdiction of the Education Labor Committee, a lot of them are going to be controversial. We're going to go about our work in a dignified way. We have a couple of years ago, we passed the Every Student Succeeds Act, and we need to see how that's working, whether or not there are any changes that need to be made. We have the Higher Education Act coming up. That's Pell Grant student loans and job training. So we have a lot of work to do.
All right. So if I were to ask, what is your top two priorities 2019 as the new chairman of the Education and Labor Committee? Two top priorities you want to get done, you want to get out of that committee. What would they be, Congressman?
Well, one is increased wages. Finally, the minimum wage bill would be high on that list. Higher Education Act will be a high priority, but it's going to take a little time. Child Abuse and Prevention and Treatment Act, CAPTA, is one I think we're going to have bipartisan support on, so we want to get do that early. There are a lot of civil rights issues that we're going to have to deal with. And there's one pressing issue, what they call multi-employer pensions. They're huge pension funds that are on the brink of becoming insolvent. if they go broke, you'll have hundreds of thousands of people losing their pensions. And the things we can do, actually, if you look at the reduced taxes people will pay if they lose their pensions, the increased federal expenditures for food benefits and Medicaid. If you look at what it's going to cost the federal government to have these go over, really the stupidest thing on the table is doing nothing. There are things we can do that can avoid the collapse of these pensions and avoid businesses going broke and people losing their pensions, and we can get out of it cheaper than if we just let nature take its course and have these plans fail. So we're going to try to come together and do the right thing and address the problem of the multi-employer pensions and a lot of the single-employer pensions, regular pensions, and a lot of government pensions are not as solvent as they need to be. And so we're going to have a look at long-term pension plans.
Congressman, what is your relationship? How do you describe your relationship with Leader Nancy Pelosi?
Well, we get along. She's a Democratic leader. I think we have a good working relationship.
Okay. I want to get to the shutdown, the president walking out of a meeting yesterday, very upset, saying there's no negotiation. Let me just ask you something. We ran a montage earlier in the show with Chuck Schumer, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, all your Democratic friends through the years advocating money for a fence, money for security, money for some kind of a barrier, millions of dollars they spent on it. I ran 8 clips, all of them saying it. Now, because Trump is saying it, he can't get $5 billion for some sort of a barrier, which many of your leaders voted for consistently before Trump was president, during Obama, during Clinton and Bush. So why not compromise here? Why not give him? Why not offer him $3 billion, get some in return, and open the government? Why the obstinacy?
You're talking $5.7 billion. That is not the price of the wall. That's the down payment on the wall. The GAO says that we have not adequately estimated the cost of the proposal, which could be $30 to $70 billion. And so, when you talk about spending money, you really ought to be talking about a plan that we don't know what it's going to cost, but it could cost $30 to $70 billion. All of the evidence we've seen has shown that the wall is not the most effective way to have border security. People say the wall is security. No, there's security initiatives, and you have the wall, which most experts say is a waste of money. Now, General Kelly, who used to be head of Homeland Security and recently left as chief of staff, said a few weeks ago that early in the administration, they dismissed the idea of a concrete wall. Would it be interesting to know why he said that, why they dismissed it? What was it about the wall that didn't make any sense? But the debate should not even be taking place while the government is shut down. I mean, you can't have a rational discussion with somebody that says, give me $5.7 billion, or I'm gonna shut the government down. That's not a debate. That's not a discussion. Let's reopen the government. Reopen all the parts of government, maybe except Homeland Security, and then have an intelligent discussion, looking at evidence. The statement that the president made the other night included some statements that were just clearly misleading. He went to great lengths as to how many people were dying as a result of drugs. He didn't say that. The opioid crisis, you get the drugs from the drugstore or your doctor's office. That's not coming across the border.
That doesn't have anything to do with the argument. But that's got nothing to do with this argument.
To say you're going to cure all these deaths with a wall is just misleading. And so let's have an intelligent discussion. Let's first reopen the government.
He's not going to do that. So he's not going to do one thing. Pelosi's not going to do the other thing. Schumer's not going to do it. So we're just stuck here. But look, I was with the president the other day. We're in a private briefing, and he said that he's willing to negotiate. So negotiate, well, to me, negotiate means you sit down in a meeting, and somebody gets one thing, and somebody gets something else, and then you reopen the government, and you go from there. He's not stuck on $5.7 billion.
No. If you're going to negotiate, you first reopen the government, and then you start
discussion. You're not. He's not going to do that.
You can't have an intelligent discussion when one side comes in saying, "I'm going to shut the government down unless you agree to this, and if you don't agree to it, we'll just keep the government shut down." That's where we are now, and it doesn't matter. Really, doesn't matter what the issue is. If you give in to that kind of tantrum.
It's not a tantrum. That's a talking point, Congressman.
Next time to be the same thing. By the way, we're going to shut the government down. Well, okay, shut it down. I mean, we can't capitulate to that kind of bullying, that kind of tantrum. Let's reopen the government like we have some sense. And the bills that are passed, the bills that are now in the Senate and going to the Senate, are all bills that have virtually unanimous Republican support. Bills that are passed either a Republican committee or a Republican House or a Republican Senate with virtual unanimous Republican support. Now, if they would vote the way they voted before, you talked about what Democrats have said in the past, if they would vote the way they voted before, you'll have veto override majorities in both the House and the Senate to reopen the government.
You know, look, you just said there's no compromise. And by the way, you've got all your talking points, the Chuck Schumer talking points down about tantrums and whatever. So I'll give you that. But look, he goes to Pelosi, who says no money for the wall or a barrier, not a dime. Well, that's the other side of the coin. I mean, when you say, well, he's not going to reopen the government, therefore he's obstinate. And then a speaker says, no, not a dime. There's no compromise there. If you guys just came to the table and split the difference, I mean, you got a four trillion dollar budget, and we're arguing over
program. He's asking for a down payment. Well, let's reduce the down payment. You still are looking at a total waste of money. He hasn't seen where the money's coming from.
No, yeah. Well, the money's coming from your $4 trillion budget. It's coming from your $4 trillion budget.
What are you going to cut in the Homeland Security Department that can make way for $30 to $70 billion?
It's not $30 to $70 billion. He's asking for 5.7, and you could probably get by with three.
That's a down payment because we don't know what you're going to spend it on. And you start a project, and he wants to start the wall, and the total cost. The GAO has estimated 30, and others have estimated $30 to $70 billion.
Congressman, are you going to tell me that the barrier, the steel wall in Tijuana has not been effective? Otherwise, San Diego would be flooded with these 5,000 migrants. So the only reason they stopped them is because of that barrier.
If you're going to prevail, you're going to prevail on the merits, not prevail because you're willing to shut down the government to get your way.
So if he opened the government, are you willing to go and negotiate
with him?
And look at
the facts. And when
are you willing
up
to negotiate?
Something like people are dying because of drugs, and therefore we need the wall, you'd be able to point out that the wall will not stop people from coming. Sarah Huckabee Sanders got caught on Fox News the other day saying that 4,000 terrorists have been caught trying to get in. And Chris Wallace said, yeah, I heard that number, and out of the 4,000, 3,900 and some got caught in airports. The wall
are you for open borders?
I mean, you come up with these scare tactics and fear mongering, and if we have an intelligent discussion, we can see who's telling the truth and have a discussion, and then we can move forward. We're not going to have an intelligent discussion if the one side comes in. Here's what I want. If I don't get it, I'm going to shut down the government and then shut down the government. I believe in a few days we're going to reopen the government on a veto override majority in both the House and the Senate.
Are you
because
for open
borders?
There are a lot of
Republicans that are saying that this is ridiculous. We need to reopen the government. We can have a discussion. There's no reason why people can't get the tax refunds because we haven't agreed on the Homeland Security budget.
The president's already said he's funded that.
Can't get inspected. There's no reason why the TSA is working with that. And I don't know how anybody expects people to go to work and not get paid. I don't know. Their lawsuits that we just heard on your news, that their lawsuits pending. I don't see how a judge can order somebody to go to work without getting paid. If you're essential, if you declare it essential and you got to go to work, well, you got to get paid.
All right, so Congressman, I get the argument for opening the government. Nobody's in favor of being closed. And if anybody listened to my show leading up to this, I said this would be a disaster and it was the wrong way to go. But here we are. It is what it is. We both have to deal with it. So let me just ask you this. Let's say the government opens. Are you for open borders or do you want a rational policy that people just can't walk in? Which do you want?
I'm for significantly more money for border security, money that will be spent effectively to increase the security at the border. All the experts have told us, and I've got on my Twitter account, I've tweeted out a couple. People can look at Bobby Scott on Twitter and see several articles, and we're going to be putting out more that explain why this down payment for the wall is not an effective use of government money. But we can have that debate with the government open. The argument that the wall is a waste of money, just like General Kelly said, that we dismiss the idea of a wall early in the administration. And if it was such a good idea, the president, a Republican Senate, and a Republican House would have passed it a long time ago.
Yeah, that's your best argument.
It wasn't a big priority shutting down the government over when he apparently had the votes in the House and the Senate.
Sure.
Rush Limbaugh questions his strength, and he's going to shut down the government unless he gets his way. Let's have a rational discussion, sitting down, working it out, with facts, going back and forth, and we can come up with a budget. Now, I can tell you, if you take $5.7 billion out of the Homeland Security budget, it's got to come from somewhere. We don't have $5.7 billion.
Congressman, you got, come on. I love you to death. You guys are running a $22 trillion national deficit, national debt. You got a $4.4 trillion budget, and we're fighting about.
Don't accuse me of that.
And we're fighting about
budgets I voted for would have balanced the budget. We'd still be in surplus.
I know that. Look, I don't lump you. You're lumped in. You're lumped in with everybody.
What?
Look, first of all, I don't think it was Limbaugh that got him all fired up, Congressman. I thought that was me. So that's just one clarification.
Okay. Okay.
The second is
you Limbaugh, Laura Ingraham. But we can have. We ought to be able to have an intelligent discussion. I don't think there's any question, and the Democratic caucus would insist that our leadership sit down and negotiate and go back and forth with facts, not make up stuff, not fear-mongering with exaggerations, but with facts, listening from experts and what actually works and what doesn't work, and what kind of budget we can spend on Homeland Security that will give us protection on the border. We can do that. But you're not going to have an intelligent discussion if somebody comes in and says, if I don't get my way, I'm going to shut down the government. You haven't given me what I want, government stays shut down. If you want to know the way out of it, I think the House and Senate will pass bills to open the government, send them to the president. If he vetoes them, I think they'll override those vetoes. We could reserve Homeland Security, open up Homeland Security, for 30 days, which would require us to keep negotiating and come up with have hearings and see from experts and come up with a budget while the government is open that makes sense. But you're not, just not going to have anything intelligent going on when one side decides my way or the highway and then shuts the government down. Now, what, the other side cannot capitulate. Because if once they put shut the government down on the table, either they'll get their way all the time, or you just got to let the government get shut down. And when I say all the time, they're going to come up the next budget. Here's what I'm going to get, and if you don't give it to me, I'm going to shut the government down. Well, if you're scared of government shutting down, you might as well not be part of the process. So let's reopen the government.
Okay.
We can do that. There are bills that. And these are Republican bills. I mean, there's stuff that Democrats have, we believe we can get in the legislation if we had time to negotiate. There are nice little initiatives that Democrats would like that we believe we can get into a final version. We have skipped all that. We've just taken the Republican passed bills from last year, put them on the table, and passed them. That's how you open the government. Because if the Republicans vote for it like they did last year, you'll have a veto override majority.
Well, if the Democrats voted for the barrier the way they did in the past, we wouldn't be in this situation. So, look, there's two sides of this argument, and you're taking the position that
one side comes in and says, I get my way or I shut the government down.
No, Pelosi's saying the same thing. Your speaker's saying the same thing. She's saying not a dime.
Let's reopen the government. Let's reopen the government. And then have an intelligent discussion like adults. Let's not have one side come in and says this is what I'm getting. If I don't, I'm gonna shut the government down. That's not negotiation. That's not a discussion. That's not even intelligent.
I believe your sincerity. I know you a long time. We're friends. I love you to death. You're my congressman, and I believe you. Right. So I believe what you're saying, that you went this way, that Bobby Scott, Congressman, Mr. Chairman, 3rd District, Virginia, would be willing to have a rational discussion. I believe that. But I don't think a majority in your caucus share that view. So the fear of people that are immigration hawks like me that want to see a secure border are afraid that this will go nowhere. And then on the 29th day of the Homeland Security, we're going back to the same thing. I mean, so it's not, it's, I mean, if you were the speaker, I'd be in favor of it.
Except that people are getting paid.
All right. You and I have been opposed to the intervention in Syria for, I don't know, the whole time. Now we're pulling out of it. I thought the Democratic Party was like the party of peace and non-intervention. Now, all of a sudden, they're siding with neocons and warmongers and John Bolton.
If you're going to pull out, you ought to have a plan. The president just announced we're getting out, no plan, it was so bizarre that the Secretary of Defense quit on the spot. His National Security
Advisor, Mr. Bolton. I'm glad he quit. I'm glad he quit.
Okay, well, Mr. Bolton is saying, we're getting out right now. What he meant was we're going to get out when this is in place and that's in place, and we'll have an intelligent withdrawal strategy. Well, you just can't come out in a lurch and leave all your allies wondering what in the world is going on. You have to have an intelligent plan to come out. Now, I would hope that they come up with a plan to withdraw. We don't want to stay there forever. But we can't leave our allies all wondering whether or not we're a reliable ally or not. You can't leave the situation worse because we just abruptly left. Let's have an intelligent withdrawal strategy, focused on coming out, but have it well thought out and intelligent, and not one that provokes the reaction we're getting from our allies that are questioning whether we can be relied on. And a lot of people.
If Hillary Clinton was president. Look, this is Trump derangement syndrome, Congressman. Let's just get the hell out of there. I mean, he said we're going to get out. You and I have been arguing for him to get out forever. Of course we'll have a plan. And he's not going to telegraph that. He's already said that.
He made the announcement he made. That's why that's why all of our allies.
Well, now he's forcing.
Now wondering what in the world is going on and why the Secretary of Defense, that apparently you didn't like anyway, but he just abruptly quit.
I don't like him anyway. I'm glad he's out. Not a moment too soon. Look, this is the warmongers and the neocons. They're attacked back. What the president has done is he's made everybody figure out a withdrawal strategy. That's what he's made everybody do. If he hadn't said this, we'd have been there in Syria in perpetuity, just like we're in Afghanistan in perpetuity. Now,
well,
I got to go,
up,
but
coming up with an let me tell withdrawal let me, strategy, you get a lot of support for coming out of Syria with an intelligent withdrawal strategy that doesn't leave a total mess behind. You'll have a lot of support for a withdrawal strategy, but an announcement that we're coming out right now is not an intelligent withdrawal strategy.
He's forced the hand of the warmongers and neocons running around the government that are wedded to the money coming from the military-industrial complex that supplies all these wars. He's following through on a campaign promise, and he's making State Department of Government and everybody else figure out how to get us the hell out of there. And I commend him for that. Now,
when
I got to go, but I just want to tell my audience. Okay, I got to tell my audience all the things we agree on because we just had a debate here for 30 minutes. Okay, number one, Bobby Scott voted against all these wars. I was with him on that. Number two, Bobby Scott, only person, one of the only people in Congress to have the courage to vote against Patriot Act, son of Patriot Act. Bobby Scott fighting for justice reform for 30 plus years since he's been there. So am I. Bobby Scott against private jails. So am I. Bobby Scott opposed to no-knock warrants. So am I. Bobby Scott said there were no WMDs in Iraq. There were not. So did I. Bobby Scott didn't want to cut taxes and start wars to add to the deficit. So was I. Bobby Scott was against NAFTA before anybody knew what it was, and he fought against TPP. These are all the things that we agree on, and now we're agreeing to get out of Syria. So there you go, Congressman. There's so much that we agree on. Let's get the government open. Give us the opportunity to get this barrier done, and there'll be another thing that we can agree on. How about that?
Let's do border security. Let's discuss what that means, and then we can agree. But the first thing, we've got to reopen the government.
All right, I got to go. Congressman Bobby Scott, my congressman, 3rd District, Virginia, thanks for, as always, being on every week and the lively discussion.